This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Thanks to the Resident Frequency Radio crew for another great show playing tracks and chatting with Collingwood artists. Welcome to Living Free, a one-hour show in which we highlight one of the many programs that assist in recovery from drugs, alcohol, gambling and food addictions. Our guests share their recovery story and highlight that shared experience saves lives. You're listening to 3CR Community Radio, 855 on your AM radio or 3CR Digital or maybe live streaming on 3cr.org.au. My name's Michael, and I'm joined in the studio today by Chris. He's going to share his experience of recovery from gambling addiction with the help of Gamblers Anonymous. And before we do that, I'd like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, traditional owners of the land from which 3CR transmit people-powered radio. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and acknowledge that this land was stolen and sovereignty was never ceded. Also, please note that Living Free may involve discussion of topics such as suicide, mental illness, self-harm and family violence. So please consider your well-being and that of others while listening. Welcome, Chris.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you here and you could join us in the studio. We'd like to start the show by asking our guests to tell us a little bit about their upbringing or their childhood. So what was it like growing up as Chris?
Always felt like I was sort of chasing something, whether it be, you know, validation, connection, a sense of control. I was a really shy kid. I've struggled to talk about my feelings. I think a lot of that probably stems from the relationship I had with my father growing up. Wasn't very emotionally available for myself, which I struggled with quite a lot. So speaking up and, you know, talking about my feelings just didn't really come natural to me. Outside of that, you know, I like to think I was a pretty fun guy at school. Like, you know, I was able to establish really good relationships growing up, had some really good mates around me. Home life was a little bit challenging. My sister had a really big part in my upbringing. I think she was probably the only person in my life that sort of understood what I dealt with at home and how that sort of affected me. So we were really close growing up.
She older or younger?
She's a couple of years older than me. So she was the big sister looking after the little brother. I think, you know, as with a lot of relationships, as time goes on, you know, things happen in life, can tend to drift apart. I think that's a relationship that I really missed through a big portion of my life. So that's how my early days sort of looked.
Uncomfortable?
Very uncomfortable at times. I never wanted to go home. Always wanted to stay out and do things. Always chased that feeling of, fulfillment somewhere, which I wasn't really getting at home. Whether it be drinking early at a young age, drug use, those were things that sort of helped me navigate through my early teen years and escape my problems at home.
And did you belong to sporting clubs? Did you?
So I've always been a cricket person. So I've played cricket since I was about 8 years old. Funny enough, my dad was my cricket coach throughout my junior career, which probably wasn't helping me in a way. Sort of brought home life into my sporting world. But I loved the sport that much. I kept going with it. Something that I've sort of just recently got back into over the last couple of years.
Okay. When did you, we're here to talk about your gambling, when did that sort of start?
So gambling for me, I think it's funny enough, I look back on it now, it's, you know, as a kid, you know, mum, dad, or maybe sometimes grandma bring home a scratchy that used to fulfill me, I guess. The excitement when you won $2 from nothing was always fun. Melbourne Cup days, you'd do sweeps at the sports club, cricket club. That's something that I used to froth when I was younger. Always wanted to pick the winner. But for me, I think really when I was about 18, the first thing I did, essentially 2 days after my birthday, was download Sportsbet, and away I went. Started out with small bets here or there, a couple of dollars, you know, throughout the week, probably spend 20, 30 bucks. And that's really where it started. Kicked off for me probably when I was about 21 at one of my jobs. A lot of the boys there loved the punt. We'd quite often come in the morning, talk about the races for the day, what NBA games were on, whatever it was really. It could be any kind of sport, footy, NBA. I got to a point where I was betting on European handball at 3 a.m. in the morning.
As you do.
Whatever you can do to win a couple of dollars.
So the when you were younger, when you were 18 or 19, you were self-funding that? I mean, you had a job and stuff like that allowed you to set the money aside for it?
Yeah, definitely self-funded. I wouldn't say I'd be setting the money aside. It was kind of take each day as it comes. You know, if I had 20 bucks to spend, I had 20 bucks to spend. If I had 100 bucks to spend, I'd spend 100 bucks. Didn't really put a limit on it. As long as I was sort of enjoying it, I'd do it really.
So it wasn't an addiction so much then. It was more of a pastime, and there was still an enjoyment, and you weren't doing it against your will.
Most definitely, I think it's just something that, you know, something to do throughout the day. It was a bit of a down moment at work, or you know, after work, just to kill an hour or so. I wouldn't have thought that. Looking back at it now, I don't think I had an addiction then. But yeah, it just progressed as the years went on, I guess.
Okay, and so how old do you reckon you were when you started being a real problem, and what did that look like in your life? Where were you? Were you in relationship with someone? Were you still hanging, you know, living with your family? What was going on?
Yep. So I moved out when I was 18. I was living with my ex-partner. Probably escalated during that time at the job I just mentioned. I think I lied a lot. I hid where my money was going from my ex-partner, which obviously had consequences on how we sort of interacted. I became really, really good at lying, to be honest.
It's not the thing we were looking to achieve, is it? I've got really good at lying. You know, say, my dishonesty has reached a level that I haven't really, I should set the bar higher.
That's essentially what it was. I couldn't help myself. Obviously, I was a little bit embarrassed about where my money was going. I didn't want to admit that I'd, you know, lost $1,000 this week betting on sports that I don't even care about. Just hiding that.
Yeah, and obviously that dishonesty is a really difficult thing in all the relationships we have. You told me a story before we came on the air about the guy I used to work with who you want to tell that story again about the, you know, your plan for the day and how you planned out your week?
Yeah, so essentially we'd come in the morning and discuss our sort of bets from yesterday, how we went, what we're going to do today, what we're punting on. We'd be up the side of the warehouse throughout the day, taking turns, watching race after race, checking the NBA scores. I guess that's where it sort of like progressed for me. I couldn't not do that. I went to work to sort of make money and pay bills, but at the same time, I was making money through gambling. Earning a wage, getting paid an hourly rate, and then also winning hundreds of dollars on the punt. So I thought it was the best thing ever. Pretty much two wages in one. So
were you making money at that stage? Like, were you in front?
There were definitely times where I was in front, definitely times where I was behind, and times where I was neutral. I think early days for me, I was probably in a little bit more a control phase. I look back and that's how I see it, where I probably didn't let myself go too far in the red, but I think that's what sort of enticed me to keep gambling. Was early days I was winning so often, I was winning more than I lost, and I thought, well, if I don't win this one, I'll get the next one, and it sort of went in that vicious cycle and progress from there.
So if you're actually, and if you're betting on stuff that you know about, like, is there an investment in what's the word I'm looking for, where you want to get more information about that particular sport and you go, actually, what I'm going to do is this is research and I'm going to spend all this time researching so I'm going to get better at this thing.
That is exactly what it is, mate. You'd spend pretty much your whole morning before you get to work and your afternoon once you finish work looking up statistics, previous games, go down a whole rabbit hole, really. You look at different opponents and how much they scored against them last time. Did I score more on home court or away court? Those sorts of things. And, you know, you tell yourself, it's like, well, this is the percentage of this getting up is going to be higher because usually when he plays here and against this team, he's averaging 25 points. So 20 points is a sure thing. And eventually you'd start to believe that it was going to happen, not if it was going to happen, it's like when it was going to happen. So
I guess I have a, you know, conspiracy theory that the guys who do the stats for the, you know, how the stats changed in football,
yep,
they just dramatically changed at one stage where they went and they're doing all the handball assists and all this stuff and all this, these numbers that we never talked about in football before. And I reckon it's just almost as about gambling as all these extra things you can gamble on. Like it used to be the who kicked the first goal at the beginning of the game or the grand final or who, but all of a sudden you can bet on like anything and everything.
That's exactly right. There's so many different markets. Like, you know, I look back from probably when I was 21 to, you know, recently when I stopped gambling, the amount of markets there are in sports that you didn't even know existed, really. Like, you know, like there's so many things that I've been exposed to because I ended up finding it and scrolling on Sportsbet at 2 a.m. in the morning. And it's like, I didn't know. Table tennis, you can bet on table tennis, for example. It's like, I didn't know a single thing about table tennis, but you know, if I was going to make $20 or $100 or whatever it was from it, I was putting some money down. So
it's like being an expert at the diving during the Olympics.
That's exactly right.
Okay, so thanks very much. What we might do is we'll go to a break and we'll play some music and we.
Is drinking costing you more than money? Alcoholics Anonymous provides a free and anonymous recovery service to anyone who wants to call it quits. Join millions of other alcoholics worldwide and take your first brave steps toward a new beginning. There are thousands of AA meetings happening every week across Australia. If you'd like to find your closest meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous or have any questions regarding this tried and tested treatment for alcoholism, call 1300 AAAAA, that's 1300 22 22 22, or visit aa.org.au. This community service announcement is sponsored by Alcoholics Anonymous.
Do you want to come and take a look inside 3CR? Curious to see our studios and where your favourite radio program is produced? On Friday the 25th and Saturday 26th of July, 3CR is running tours as part of Melbourne Open House 2025. The 45-minute tours will take you right through the station and into the studios, as well as provide history and details of our current programming and projects. Come take a look. To register, head to openhousemelbourne.org and search for 3CR. Melbourne Open House at 3CR, Friday the 25th and Saturday 26th of July. See you then.
You're listening to Living Free on 3CR Community Radio, 855 on the AM on your AM dial, or 3CR on digital radio, or maybe streaming on 3cr.org.au. If you'd like to listen to one of our many podcasts, then you can find us on your preferred podcast platform or just search 3CR Living Free and check out our website. You can also contact us by phone or email. Today we're talking to Chris about his recovery from gambling addiction through Gamblers Anonymous. And before the break, you gave us some insight into your introduction to gambling, and maybe we'll move forward a little bit in time and see where you're at when it became really troublesome.
Yep. So when I probably felt like it started to escalate. So there was a time when I was about 25, 26, went on a bit of a boys trip away with my old man, my uncle and my cousins. Went out on the source one night that had a few too many. Throughout the day, I'd probably pumped about $1,000, $1,500 through the TAB. Actually broke down to my uncle, had a chat, and probably the first time I sort of admitted to anyone that I was struggling with gambling addiction. That sort of turned into a stern, aggressive conversation with my old man on the way home. Kind of put a bit of the fear of God in me, I guess. And I stopped gambling for a period of about 12 to 18 months. I was in a bit of a financial hole. Mum sort of dug me out of that for a moment, but didn't take long for me to sort of head back down that path. Sort of became my escape from reality. You know, I wasn't happy in my previous relationship, wasn't happy in my work life, didn't really feel like I'd achieved much at that point in my life. So I just buried my head into my phone constantly, day after day. Got to a point where, you know, I was chasing losses. You know, my bets increased from, you know, 10, 20 bucks to 50 bucks, sometimes 100 bucks. If I had a good win, I'd be pumping $1,000, you know, on a small bet, hoping just to double me money. There were times where I won, times where I lost. I just constantly chased that thrill, the adrenaline rush of having a big win. I'd hit some pretty big multis that I got some good returns on in the time, and you know, I just thought, you know, if I kept going, I'm one or two bets away from winning big, you know, that'll solve all my problems. You know, unfortunately that never happened. I was in a really dark place for a long time. You know, I struggled to talk about my feelings. So, you know, no one knew I had a problem. No one knew what I was dealing with. You know, once again, the lies kept going with my partner. That kept our relationship going down a sort of downward spiral. And that just sort of kept progressing as the years went on. So that was probably for a 6-year period after I sort of first initially admitted that I had a problem to my uncle.
Can I just ask a quick question there? You said the words you were, I pumped $1,000 to $1,500 in that day. How old were you then?
About 25.
Okay, and so were you earning $1,000 to $1,500 to be able to do that? How did you fund that?
So I got to a point where I had credit cards. You know, they used to allow deposits straight from your credit card into your gambling platforms on your phone. You know, there's so many different dodgy companies that give you loans when you got bad credit. I'd be paying off a credit card with another credit card and getting a loan to pay off that credit card, and it just went in that vicious cycle. I never really looked at it. I sort of looked at it like I can solve this problem by winning on the punt. Can pay it all off in one hit, and that's what I told myself when I kept going. But you know, as most sort of gambling addicts know, that's never the case. You just end up chasing your losses, and you dig yourself further into a hole, I guess.
So it's a spiral,
100%.
Yeah. And so, and what happened next? Like you've got this stage where you've obviously financially the burden, and I imagine that affects your sleep, it affects everything else.
100%. You know, at the time I was smoking marijuana, and you know, people used to think, "Oh, you must sleep like a baby." It's like, unfortunately, not. I was too many other things going on in my mind. You know, I'd probably get about 3 hours sleep a night, and you know, the first thing I'd do in the morning was not check a message or check social media. The first thing I'd be doing, I'd still be in bed. I'd roll over, reach for my phone, and be logging into my sports bet account to see if my multi got up overnight. And if it didn't, straight back on to a new bet to start my day. And you know, throughout the day, I'd be constantly on my phone, checking updates of scores. And you know, if I saw that I lost a leg in my multi and wasn't going to win any money from it, I'd be straight to putting on another one. And sometimes one wasn't enough. I'd have 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 bets going at a time. And I think I got to a point where I look back at it now and I find it a bit funny. It's, you know, some of my multis were like 30 legs. So, you know, I needed 30 things to go right for me to win. So the chances of that happening were very slim.
I think it was the unluckiest guy on earth.
That's exactly right. I was always losing by one, and it was always someone else's fault. It's, you know, the coach took him off in the last 5 minutes. If that didn't happen, you know, I would have won $6,000. And it was, yeah, very, very depressing attitude to have now that I look back on it. But at the time, it's, you know, you just kept going.
And when you're in it, you're in it.
That's exactly right.
And it is. And you can't, well, my experience is I can't dig my own way out. Like the whole idea is to stop digging at some stage. So And so how's that playing out in your relationships? Are you still with the same partner?
No, so I ended that relationship probably just over 12 months ago now. Moved back in with the folks. That probably wasn't a good thing, as you know, both my parents, they do gamble. And that's obviously something that I was trying to get away from at the time. But, you know, even then, once I moved back home and split up my partner, it was still a problem for me. It probably wasn't until sort of the December last year is when I first started to look myself in the mirror and be like, what are you doing with your life? It's, you know, you've done this for 12, 13 years. It's about time to grow up, sort it out. So yeah, I think that's probably the first step in change for myself.
And so was the breakup of your relationship messy? Or did she just say put a line in the sand and say you do this or do that and you choose to gamble?
It was very complex. It was definitely messy. It wasn't the way that I wanted to end things. But once again, I think my actions over the years, you know, I used to sit back and blame other people for everything that went wrong in my life. You know, even at that time, I think, you know, I shifted a lot of the blame for myself because I wasn't ready to admit that, you know, I'd done some wrong things, and, you know, that sort of contributed to how that panned out. But yeah, I think now looking back on it, it's funny. You can sit back and be like, okay, well, maybe if you weren't spending thousands of dollars and putting that extra burden and, you know, lying about, I got to a point where I got a pay increase at one of my jobs, and, you know, I actually ended up making some really good money. It was probably a $50,000 pay increase for a period of time, and, you know, I couldn't even go home and celebrate that with my ex-partner. I lied about it because for me that's an extra 50 grand a year I've got to put on the punt, and that's exactly what I did. Like, it's so not something that I'm proud of, but, you know, it's something that I'm able to talk about now.
Yeah, that was my experience. I used to get paid a bonus at holidays, and I'd just go and I wouldn't tell my wife about the fact that I just got this bonus on holidays, and I'd spend it all on alcohol, thinking I would stock up for my holidays, and then I'd drink it all in the first 4 days, and I go, oh my God, I've just spent, you know, $1,000 on 40% alcohol, bottles of 40% alcohol, and I've knocked that over in thinking I've stocked up. Like, oh, yeah. And it's gone, and I can't mention it to anybody, and so then it's a secret, and I can't, and it means that if I go to work, and, you know, my boss gets along with my wife, and he can never mention that did Michael spend that bonus on you, and no, what bonus?
Yeah, no, it's funny you say that, because I did have another job after that one where, you know, every 3 months I was fortunate enough that they used to. No performance base, just here of his $3,000 for working for the company. And once again, it's, you know, that's money that I could have used to sort of help dig myself out of the hole. But, you know, I just kept pushing myself further down it.
Yep. We're giggling about the fact that that's, I guess, my experience of 12 step fellowship is like, go and sit in a room with people who have these horror stories, absolute horror stories. And when I'm sitting in the room and I'm identifying with the same problem and we're laughing, like, there's some smiles on people's face. You go, this is dark stories. It's, you know, like, it's dark comedy in a lot of ways. And you go, oh, but. And the outsiders, when they sit in and they don't have the same experience, they sit in and go, I can't believe you guys are laughing about this. Like, because we train the people. We had this conversation in the cafe before the show. But, you know, we train the people around us to act in a particular way around us, and we harm them through the fact that we make them, you know, not trust us. We make them not rely on us because we're untrustworthy and we're unreliable, and we do things that we do stuff that we normally wouldn't do. We aren't that person. I have a moral compass, but my behaviour doesn't reflect that at all. And the people around me then get weary.
Yep.
And when I am telling them the truth, they don't believe me. And so then I'm getting angry about the fact that they're not trusting me even when I'm telling the truth.
100%. 100%.
Yeah. So what did you do? What made you, what was the last thing that happened that you went, actually, I can't do this anymore?
I think there was a night where, you know, I had some personal problems going on outside of gambling. But as well as gambling, I think I'd just lost the last of my money. Went for a drive, you know, spent a few hours in my room just crying, feeling sorry for myself, to a point where it's, you know, I've had days where I didn't want to be here anymore. I remember sitting down along the beach, or it's probably about 11 o'clock at night, and just sobbing uncontrollably. You know, I called my mum. Didn't really make me feel any better, to be honest. And then I got a call from my sister, and just talking to her and listening to her speak about how important I am in her life and, you know, my niece's life at the time, probably made me realize it's, you know, I am worth something, you know, and she probably convinced me not to do something I thought I wanted to do. And I think that was the biggest turning point for me. I mean, I'd already sort of tried to get help outside of that, that wasn't really working. And this was all before I sort of started Gamblers Anonymous. So yeah, I think that was the turning point for myself, because I didn't want to be in that place. I didn't want to be in that mindset. You know, I wanted to get better. I wanted to improve myself, show up for people that, you know, showed up for me in the past. And that's something I probably haven't been able to do the whole time I've sort of been battling this addiction.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't look like it's life and death because it's just gambling. Like, but they don't put that on the TV. That's, like on the ads, that isn't saying, actually, it, for the people who can't control it, it isn't just a matter of, oh, I think better, but, you know, it doesn't look like it's a life or death decision. And at some stage, I've got to make the decision about whether I'm going to live or die.
Yeah.
And that's a really big call when my problems are overwhelming. It looks like there's no light at the end of the tunnel at all, because I've backed myself into a corner, and my experience of backing myself into a corner is I make really shit decisions when I back myself into a corner, because I'm, you know, driven by the fact that I need to have I've got to have an outcome and I've got to have it now.
Mm.
My amount of choices is so small, and so I go the least worst option.
Yep.
And then the least worst option produces even more chaos and worse outcomes, and that's the best I've got.
Yep.
And then I've got no choice. Eventually I think, oh, actually they'd be better off without me. And that's the best thinking I've got.
Mm-hmm.
That's a horrible place to be in, I imagine.
100%. Most definitely. It's not something I'd wish upon anyone, really. I guess, you know, like you just said, you know, a lot of people just think, gambling addiction, it's not that bad. I don't think people really understand. Once you get that far down the hole, it's just like any other addiction. It's like a alcohol addiction. It's a drug addiction. It's the same concept. You know, you just keep pushing yourself further down, and you feel like there's no way out. There's no escape. I mean, I'm probably fortunate enough to be where I am now, and you know, I've found the light at the end of the tunnel. Where you know, I've definitely heard stories and know of people that probably haven't found that light and felt like they needed to do something that they probably didn't need to. So yeah, I'd like to sit here and consider myself pretty fortunate in the position where I am today. But yeah, it's, you know, like you said, the little gambling thing that pops up on the TV, it's like, oh, I just call this number and you'll be fine. That's something that, you know, really sort of infuriates myself. You know, it's wherever you look, no matter what it is, you can't watch a sporting game on TV without being exposed to, you know, some form of sports marketing for gambling. It's you watch a game of footy and you probably watch more gambling ads about putting on bets than you do the actual sport. So
yeah, and if I could just think my way out of that, I'd just think my way out of it. If I just had, you know, a better control, or if I just had that, and then they make it sound like I'm missing something.
That's exactly
and,
right.
And I'm not missing something. The fact is that I'm powerless over this, and you know, it's a powerlessness is actually a very big 12-step fellowship word.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that it isn't about weakness; it's about power, not having a power to make a choice. You know, my experience is that I end up doing stuff I don't want to do, even though I know I don't want to do it whilst I'm doing it, and I don't have the power to just say no. And you know, in my life, my stuff is alcohol, but you know, if I could make a decision to just not drink every day, I could do that. And if that was 99% effective, that looks amazingly successful.
Yep.
And I'd take 99% effective in every area of my life, except that for an alcoholic like me, what that looks like is I drink every 100 days and once I'm back, I'm going again. Or if it's 99.9% effective, that means I drink every 1,000 days, And what by that time I drink it, and that's every 2.5 years. And what happens in that 2.5 years is that I build the trust up of all the people around me, and they all think I'm all okay again. And then because I've been making a decision to not drink or to not do this behaviour that's outside my moral compass, and I've been making this decision not to do it, and then at 2.5 years I do it and they go, he doesn't love us again.
Yep.
And that's what relapse looks like in any of those things, is that and it's a killer. It's a killer for the people around us if we can. So we've got to find a better solution than that.
100%.
Let's talk about that after we come back from a break. We're going to play some more music and...
...3CR is about community, and we welcome your participation at the station.
3CR is open to a wide diversity of volunteers and is a great way to connect with Melbourne's activist community.
Have you ever thought about volunteering, doing a reception shift, getting a program on air,
training in radio skills, or contributing to one of the station's committees?
There are many ways to be involved at 3CR.
To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au and get in touch.
If you're a renter with problems such as repairs, getting your bond back, negotiating a rent hike, or facing eviction, it helps to know your rights. For free information and advice on renting, you can visit Tenants Victoria at www.tenants.vic.org.au, Arnica Legal at www.anikalegal.com, or contact your nearest community legal centre. The government is planning to demolish and redevelop high-rise public housing towers in Melbourne. If you're living in a public housing tower and need free legal advice about your options, find your nearest community legal centre at www.fclc.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
Welcome back. You're listening to Living Free on 3CR, 855 on the AM dial, or digital radio, or live streaming on 3cr.org.au. Thank you. We've just finished the radiothon last couple of weeks through June, and I'd just like to thank all the listeners of Living Free for their donations. We set a budget for the month and for the radiothon, and we smashed it, you know, which goes to show to us that people are keen to listen to recovery stories. From whatever it is, the behaviours that they do, you know, listening to people share about their behaviours and being open about it, and showing that those their stories save lives, and we really want to just really thank again all the people that donated to the program or to 3CR through the program, and yeah, keep listening. Today we're talking with Chris about his recovery through Gamblers Anonymous, and we've reached the stage there. We were talking about he's hit the bit where he's going to make a decision whether he's going to live or whether he's going to die, and he's decided he wants to live. So what happened next? Where did you go from there?
So my first step was I didn't really know where to go to seek help, so I called that number that you see on the ads you see on TV, the Gamblers Helpline, and they sort of directed me to some counselling sessions. So I started that at about late December last year. Was seeing someone for about 4 months, developed a really good relationship with him, kind of dug a bit deeper than my gambling and where that sort of initial want and need sort of originally came from. So pretty much unloading a lot of my childhood trauma. But he decided to leave that company, and I had to start again with someone fresh, which was a really hard thing. It took me a long while to get to the point to initially actually start seeing someone. To have that person disappear was hard, and it's about 3 weeks before I ventured out and started seeing someone new. Didn't really have that same relationship or build that rapport with the new counsellor, so... she did mention something about GA in one of our sessions, and I thought, this isn't working for me anymore. I need something else. So looked it up online, spent on GA website, found the closest meeting I could. And 2 days later, I was at my first meeting. I think I was very daunted and scared, nervous, didn't really know what to expect. Hadn't heard anyone going to GA before. But I was at the point where I've got nothing to lose. I'll give it a go. And went on in, and it was probably the best thing I've ever done. Kind of wish I headed there a lot sooner than I did. I think being in an environment where you're listening to people who have shared similar experiences with you, you know, there's a lot of knowledge to gain. You know, there's people there that haven't had a bet for 10 years, but, you know, they still go every week showing up because they know they have to. You know, I'm still early days in my recovery. I'm up to day number 93 without having a bet today. But yeah, just having those shared experiences and listening to people's stories and people listening to me and actually understanding my experiences, because more than likely they've probably gone through the same thing or if not something extremely similar. So it's been really refreshing for me.
So what does that look like? How often are you doing meetings of GA?
So it's every Monday night. Essentially, there has been a few weeks where I've gone to other places. You know, I have missed my regular one from occasion just due to work commitments and other things. There's plenty of options available. So if you can't go to the one you normally go, generally one night throughout the week, there's one in a different location. You know, you can jump on a Zoom meeting. Kind of just depends on what works for you. They say the more you go to, the better. But yeah, so I've essentially been going probably once, twice a week, just depending on how I'm sort of feeling. And if I feel like I need to vent or, you know, I want to listen to someone else's story to make myself feel a little bit better or whatever it may be.
Yeah, so, and there's a, you know, big variance in people. Is it male, female, you know, sort of?
It's a combination of all, really. You know, you've got blokes who are sort of just starting out on their recovery journey. There's females, there's, you know, there's different aspects of gambling. You know, you've got your pokey venues, you've got online betting, you've got the casino. So you get people from all sort of avenues. So I guess, yeah, it's just really refreshing listening to their stories and how you can sort of relate to that. And, you know, getting up and speaking about your story, sometimes that could help someone else in the room feel a bit more confident about seeking help, or, you know, knowing that they're not alone. You know, that, you know, you guys could have a chat after the meeting and get to know each other better and, you know, share experiences, whatever it may be.
And so, and I guess addiction isn't discriminatory. It sort of gets all people of all ages and all walks of life, because everybody's experience is going to be a little bit different. And I guess there's a commonality that you come when you're sitting in the room, as you explained, that mm-hmm. You're hearing other people and you're going, oh, I may not have done that, but I could see that I'd do that.
That's exactly right. It's like, you know, you listen to people speak and, like, you know, it might trigger something. It's like going to make you think about something that sort of happened earlier in life. It's like, oh, hang on a second, maybe that was my turning point. Like, that makes sense. Listening to them talk about it, it's like, wow, well, my God, like, it's that sounds very similar to what I've sort of lived. So it's a little bit uncanny of how similar some of the stories are. But I guess it's the same addiction, so we're all fighting the same battle. But yeah.
And do you and did you get a sense of relief like that when you sort of walked in, you're not so
I was that first sort of initial session, I was extremely nervous, obviously never being before, never hearing about it. I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know the format of it. But I remember walking out of that first meeting and I felt like a massive weight had been lifted off my shoulder, that I'd found, you know, my sort of place that was going to be beneficial for me moving forward. So yeah, like, it's, like I said, it's the best thing I've ever done. I wish it's was spoken about more. You know, because a lot of people that do go there for the first time, it's like, they're either forced to do it or, you know, it's like I said before, I didn't even really know that was an option until my sort of therapist brought it up and mentioned it in passing. I was like, oh, hang on a second, this might be okay for me. Like, it's okay to talk about your problems with a therapist, but at the same time, it's like they've probably never had a gambling addiction. So how much can they really understand what you're going through. So,
yeah, I guess the 12-step fellowships aren't the place of first resort. Like they are. I've tried everything else. Mm-hmm. I think I'll do this because I know, you know, I didn't want to walk into an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting and go, bugger it. I'm here. Like it wasn't my aim in life when I started drinking at 13 and 28 good years of drinking, I'm going to make it to rehab and then AA.
Yep, 100%. But, you know, I think just with Gambling Anonymous, it's like those meetings, it's has helped me, one, in my gambling, but in my personal life, it's helped me being able to open up to people. You know, over the last 6 months, I've built some really strong relationships. You know, my two best mates, Benny and Drewy, like, they've been a father figure to me that I probably never had growing up. I think, you know, and that's all built on the back of GA. It's like, you know, they've given me the confidence to be able to, I mean, I can stand up there and talk to a bunch of strangers and, you know, it's a lot easier to do that. But talking to the people that you love and care about, it's a different story. And knowing that I've got people in my life that are willing to listen to me without judgment, and you know they want to understand my problem. They're not there to make comments on it. They're just there to listen if I need to. And that's been a big takeaway for me from GA. That's something that I've always struggled with in life, and I think I've gotten to a point now where I'm comfortable talking about my issues, especially my gambling problem. I actually look to engage in those conversations with people now. You know, I'll even have chats with young fellas at the pub, you know, and they think they're just having a good old time. And I'm not there to tell people what to do and what not to do. But if me telling my story to them can make them think twice about, you know, what this could potentially do to them in the long run, and help them in that way, like I'm all about that. So it's been great.
Yeah, and plant a seed in mind that they don't have a problem right now, but if they have a problem in the future, like your gambling wasn't always that, what it looked like at the end. It started in, you know, fun and excitement and that stuff, and that's the same. You come across these people and they might just have it in their mind to go, actually, I remember that guy.
Yep.
That guy told me that he was in that position I'm right in now, and there's hope. I guess that's the hearing other people's experiences is the hope in the rooms. And yeah, it's been great to listen to you today. Thank you. If you'd like to, thanks to Chris, if you'd like to find out more about Gamblers Anonymous, then you can phone them on 9696 6108, or you can go online at gaaustralia.org.au. It's about all the time we've got. So thank you, Chris, for coming along, sharing your experience.
Thanks for having me. It's been great.
Awesome. And I hope you'll be able to join us again next week when Anne will be chatting with her guest about recovery. And coming up next,
Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.